When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Claiming a person can't do their job because of their race is sort of like the textbook definition of a racist comment. This is not conservatism.
You can't make this up sometimes.
But I don't think there's any place in a campaign for anything that can look like is an anti-Semitic image.
Standing on his own, would Donald Trump be a good president of the United States?
That's not the question we have in front of us.
Hello and welcome to TrumpCast, the show about the man who says the Central Park Five are still guilty, even though they were exonerated by DNA evidence, Donald Trump. I'm Jacob Weisberg. So sore losers are nothing new in politics. Richard Nixon was the epitome of a sore loser. Nixon's famous last press conference after he lost the California governor's race in 1962 is kind of the essence of sore loserhood. You won't have Nixon to kick around anymore. Ted Kennedy was a really sore loser to Jimmy Carter in 1980. And heck, Bernie Sanders wasn't exactly Mr. Gracious after losing to Hillary Clinton in the primaries this year. But sore losers usually wait to lose to be sore about it. Not Donald Trump. Not surprisingly, he's invented a whole new category of jerk, the anticipatory sore loser. Trump knows he's probably going to lose, so he's already in full blame everybody else mode, alternately slamming the Clinton media conspiracy, global bankers, Paul Ryan, and the Republican establishment, and of course all those inner city precincts in Philadelphia where they're somehow going to rig the vote to steal the election. If nothing else, this presents opportunities for unusual uses of the future perfect tense. Those grapes will have been sour anyway. We shall be robbed. There's no sore loser sorer than the loser who's sore when he hasn't even lost yet. But what about the losers in the Republican Party who still haven't gotten off the Trump bandwagon in reverse, or got off it and then got back on it, or who have one foot on it and one foot off? Hardly anyone's been tougher on them than the Republican political consultant Mike Murphy. I'll be back to talk to him about what ails the GOP right after we do the tweets.
Wow. CNN town hall questions were given to crooked Hillary Clinton in advance of big debates against Bernie Sanders. Hillary and CNN, fraud. This election is being rigged by media pushing false and unsubstantiated charges and outright lies in order to elect crooked Hillary. The failing New York Times reporters don't even call us anymore. They just write whatever they want to write, making up sources along the way. The election is absolutely being rigged by the dishonest and distorted media pushing crooked Hillary, but also at many polling places. Sad. Of course, there is large-scale voter fraud happening on and before Election Day. Why do Republican leaders deny what's going on? So naive. Wow. Interview released by WikiLeaks shows quid pro quo in crooked Hillary email probe. Such a dishonest person. And Paul Ryan does zilch.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
My guest today is Mike Murphy. He's a political consultant, a commentator, and the host of a terrific podcast, Radio Free GOP. Mike, thanks for joining me on the show.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about what's going on with the Republican Party and Trump right now. Do you think that the defections are over for the moment? I mean, they've come in these waves, and the last wave was a big wave. He actually lost some Senate candidates and a lot of House candidates who had endorsed him, who unendorsed him. But is there more of that to come, or is everybody who's going to get off the boat off the boat?
No, I think there'll be another wave. They tend to be driven, I think, by two things. One, whenever Trump does something outrageous, some people jump. And two, when they make their own political calculation that Trump is killing them, they jump. And sometimes the two are connected because the outrageous stuff is an excuse to jump. So we have a debate coming up, and my guess is he'll drive yet more people away from him by some maneuver at the debate. We'll see what it is.
I mean, it's an interesting point you make that it is mostly a political calculation, or that's a big part of it for most Republicans running for office. And obviously, Republicans running in more swing states, swing districts are, you know, making a different kind of calculation about how damaging it is to be connected with Trump. But is there anybody you would point to who's making a decision that's not a political calculation, that's like a decision to bail on Trump that's against their own interest in getting elected or reelected?
Well, yeah, I think it's a mix. I think there are some people who, the ones who did it early when the political conventional wisdom was, oh, it's a deadly mistake, showed some courage. I think Lindsey Graham's a good example. I think Ben Sasse in Nebraska. You know, there were some early on who were still sitting office holders who showed a lot of courage on the Trump question. And I give Ryan some credit just because he's in a difficult position as the leader of the caucus where I don't think Trump has overwhelming support. In fact, my guess is in a secret ballot of members of the House caucus, Trump might lose that election. It would be pretty close. But there's definitely a nugget there that's very much all in for Trump. And that factors into the leadership politics that Ryan has to deal with to hold his caucus together. So I give Ryan some credit. I was wishing he'd go all the way and say he can't vote for him because he's in a kind of a logically gray area where he says, well, I've endorsed him, but I won't be seen in public with him.
You know? Right. You're splitting the hairs pretty finely there.
That's not too clean. I'm Jesuit educated, but I still have trouble working my way through that one. But in his position, he went really far, and he sent a big dog whistle, which he's been doing for a while, but he really blew it. So I give him a lot of credit. I'm sure there are others, Curtis Cabello down in Miami, who's in a tough district and was very early against Trump. I mean, all these guys have to make some calculation of what price did they pay with their primary voters versus the general. And this is one place where I think the conventional media wisdom has been really wrong and the political operative wisdom, which has maybe misguided some of these folks. I think you can survive walking away from Trump. If people, the big problem we have in the Republican Party is we treat our base voters like swing voters.
Yeah.
We call them base voters for a reason. They're very reliable. A good example is Mark Kirk in Illinois. He's in a really tough race for reelection there, but he came out against Trump a long time ago. And in the latest polling I've seen, he's polling 92% of the Republican vote. Nobody's punishing him in Illinois at all. You know, I mean, somebody is, or it's a de minimis number. But it is overwhelming. A number of Republicans are right there behind him. So I think Trump is much more of a paper tiger about the voters punishing people who don't support him. And frankly, I wish more Republicans would take a stand against Trump.
Or in Arizona, what's happening to your friend John McCain? I mean, there's a state that where the conservative voters are as conservative as can be. And McCain finally, really decisively dumped Trump. Is he going to lose votes because of that? What does it put him at risk? What happens?
I haven't seen the latest stuff there, but I believe that he will do fine. The Arizona Republican Party is one of the more rapidly pro-Trump, more movement conservative parties. But I think a very small number of people will opt not to vote for John McCain, and by an action, you know, support a more liberal Democrat and possibly a Senate majority run by Schumer. So I don't think it'll net hurt McCain. I think he'll pick up more independent votes than he will lose among some disgruntled. You know, one of the mistakes is people confuse, in my business, the value of an ecstatically happy base voter with a grumpy one. As long as the lever is pulled, it's two votes, you know?
Right.
The grumpy vote has the same value as the deliriously happy vote.
Right. And what are the real options? The options are, one, vote for McCain anyway. Two, vote for Gary Johnson or some other protest candidate. Three, stay home and don't vote. Or four, split your ticket. Vote for Trump, but make a point that you're mad at McCain for not supporting him and you're going to not give him your vote.
Yeah, drop off. In other words, cast your Trump vote at the top of the ticket and don't vote for McCain. And my guess is a few thousand people will do that. On the other hand, you're going to have ticket splitters and independents who are voting for Hillary at the top of the ticket. We're going to say, you know, I've always liked McCain. I saw a flash of the McCain I love there. I'm going to give him a vote on incumbency, on good job for the state, on respect for his independence, whatever. So net-net, I think McCain's going to do more. The almost greater problem for him and possibly other people in lean Republican states, North Carolina, Senator Burr, maybe even Senator Bond in Missouri, is a top-of-the-ticket collapse in reliably Republican states where there are just more Hillary voters than normal, and can they peel them off as they go down the ballot? I mean, the most powerful voter in keeping the Senate is the voter who's going to vote for Hillary at the top of the ticket because they are not happy about it, but they feel they have no alternative to Trump. Will they vote for a hedge? Will they split their ticket and vote for a Republican senator? And that's going to be a huge deal in Pennsylvania, in New Hampshire, in Wisconsin, and all these states where we've got people in tough environments trying to get reelected.
And my understanding, Mike, is that the trend has been away from ticket splitting in recent elections. That is, people are more and more likely to pull the lever, vote a straight party line. There's a lot of there's some polls that indicate there might be a rise in ticket splitting this time. What do you think? Is that phenomenon poised for a comeback?
Well, it's kind of fascinating. You're right. Historically, we've become more brittle and partisan. So ticket splitting has declined, which I don't think is a particularly good thing for the country. I kind of like swing voters because they make the candidates work outside their base. This year, there are two theories. Theory one is kind of the classic theory, which is in a presidential year, you look at top of the ticket, how that candidate performs, and you look at the historical norms for a given state. So Pennsylvania votes Democrat to begin with, add a successful Democrat at the top of the ticket, bad for an incumbent senator trying to be reelected there, bad for a Pat Toomey. So the kind of classic way to look at it is that Republicans are in trouble and are most likely to lose the Senate. The interesting new theory, and you know, we never know about new theories till they've been tested on election day, but the new theory is, well, we're in the internet age now, there's unlimited political information, so people between cable and the internet and everywhere else have so much more information. I would also argue a lot of trivia, but they know minute to minute what's going on in the campaign. So issues of subtext, like a lot of Republicans can't stand to be around Trump and are kind of faking their support. I've been joking that the new symbol of the party should no longer be the elephant, but it should be the crouching Republican office holder desperately trying to avoid a question about do they support Trump. And that gets the laugh because people know it's true. So
a highly camouflaged butterfly. Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah. No, rolled up in a ball, pointing the other direction, you know, trying to crawl under a table. So the result is, now that people know the context, will they really punish all the way down the ticket? That's part one of it. Part two is, Hillary's numbers are nothing special. People don't like her. I joke that she's kind of the Dasani bottled water of politics. You drink it because there's no other water on the shelf at the 7-Eleven at midnight. You know, you can't beat the distribution of the Coca-Cola gummy. So
no one ever says, go get me a Dasani. Yeah.
Right. Nobody says that. You know, it's kind of, well, who am I to insult Dasani water? But the point is they move it through distribution because it's the water of Coca-Cola. There's no hiding from it. So if people have those hesitations about Hillary, will they also act as ticket splitters to hedge her a little bit and balance things out? Now, that's always been the fond dream of many, oh, the balanced government thing. And people on polls say they kind of like it, though the history of it happening is a little thinner. Will this be a different year? Will people vote a little more strategically? If you put a gun to my head, I'd go with the old theory. But the polling right now indicates that the Senate races in these states are running much closer for the Republicans in the presidential races. So you have respondents in a poll saying, I'm not for Trump, I'm voting for Hillary, but I'm also voting for a Republican senator.
Yeah.
So the problem with polling is it gives you a great idea what happened last week. And in the next 2 weeks of this campaign, it is the long history of this stuff that people revert to mean. You know, they go to where they normally go. And that'll mean energy for the Democrats. But I think we're in the hunt. Let me put it this way. I think we might be able to hang on to the Senate by one or two, but I would not bet my house on it.
Yeah. Well, so Trump's cutting straight to the sore loser phase. He's like an anticipatory sore loser. I've never really seen this before. But he's already putting out all the things he's going to say to explain why he was cheated when he loses. So let's go straight to the recriminations phase. What happens in the Republican Party after Trump loses bad and says it's in part because this corrupt GOP establishment that didn't support me?
Yeah, that'll totally be the alibi because Trump can never admit failure. So he has to come up with a mythology of defeat. Well, I'm personally for show trials. We talked about that on Radio Free GOP. I want the scene in 10 minutes at the Home Improvement Commission and the ceiling fan, you know, gaveling to order.
With torture or without?
Yeah, I'm thinking of publishing a website listing everybody who supported or took money from Trump.
Yeah.
Because there ought to be recrimination. The problem is nobody's charged. So it's going to be like the Chinese Civil War. Warlords and armies. So you're going to have one general in the east, one in the north, two, and they're all going to be tromping around. You're going to see a big fight in the kind of the pop conservative wing of the party between probably Pence, who's kind of emerged a bit, and Cruz. You're going to see in the establishment world, there are different kind of fractions. You're going to see pressure for a generational change. And the kind of hilarious part of all this is the bigger force, the nature of the off-year election, both the lower turnout, which favors us, and where the Democratic senators are, mean we have a very good chance to recapture things in 2 years. So you see all these factions jostling to claim credit for something they know is going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
Cruz traveled to 28 states. Mike Pence did an incredibly important streaming, you know, video message to him. And that's the first jump ball to fight over. And then it'll roll out to the only process which will answer the question of who we are anymore, another nomination fight in 4 years.
Yeah, but that's a long way off. I mean, yeah, I mean, after the election, you know, you're going to have all these guys, Ryan, McConnell, everyone else saying, not my fault. And in a way, it's true. It's not any individual's fault, but collectively, it was the failure of the party to stand up to Trump, to challenge Trump, to stop him at various points when potentially he could have been stopped.
Potentially. I think it was more the fault of the primary voters, a minority, I might add, about 44%, 43%, who picked Trump. You know, our system responds to primary voters. It's actually kind of ironic. We're the only Western democracy that has this sort of grassroots control over the nominating process. It's relatively new in our politics. The Democrats still have superdelegates. So I think some people will take a look at the process. Others will recriminate. But Trump has been such an outlier, such a train wreck, and such an obviously crazy, incompetent candidate running an incompetent campaign. I think the burden of the failure of Trump will fall on Trump, and only Trump's hardcore. I mean, if you look at Republican voters who are voting for Trump now, he's not that popular. They're much more driven by kind of a party loyalty and a tribal will to see Hillary as worse. So I think Trump will take the hardest bump here, and he really deserves it. The question will be, what's next? What we wanted to have was kind of the civil war settled in the primary between another resentment candidate or grievance candidate, Ted Cruz, who I thought had the best chance to win the nomination pre-Trump, and one of the regulars, be it a Jeb Bush or a Chris Christie or a Marco Rubio or John Kasich. That was postponed by Trump muscling into the process. So those fault lines remain, and that could very much be the battle 4 years from now.
Mike, I understand that Paul Ryan's in an incredibly difficult position. I hope I'll never be in that position. But hasn't he just passed up the chance to have any kind of stand based on conscience or principle, or that after the election is going to look like it made any sense?
Well, I think he's telegraphed his disgust with Trump from the beginning. And now he's out there, and Trump is flying to Wisconsin, a state we have not carried since 1984. Purposely to hold anti-Ryan rallies. So I think Ryan's anti-Trump credentials are growing every day thanks to Trump's childish reaction. So I think he'll be fine. And, you know, compared to many of the House members who are really working hard against Trump quietly, undercover, not making sure nobody knows, he's looking like a giant. So I think Paul will be okay.
But don't you think there was at least a moment, I mean, when Rens Priebus said, essentially, we're going to have the rules of the convention are going to stop anybody from a last-minute challenge to Trump. I mean, maybe that would have failed, but there was a closing ranks around Trump. He's the nominee. Don't resist it. Accept it.
Oh, yeah. No, look, Rens and the RNC, I get that they're the guardians of order in the party, but it was a bad deal. They shouldn't have done it. And I think in our show trials, the party regulars who are way too fast to drink the Trump Kool-Aid are going to be really questioned.
Can I buy tickets to your show trial? This is something I'd love to see, although you may have trouble getting the defendants to appear.
We're going to cover it live on Radio Free TOP, and you're welcome. Again, I think it'll be interesting to see how the pragmatic forces in the party deal with this, and do they go to the process? That's an interesting question.
Fareed Zakaria had a column this week, very strong column, saying, look, the GOP has destroyed itself. It's finished in its old form. And there's a way in which I certainly agree with that. I mean, the party of Reagan, the party that had a consensus around the Reagan view of smaller government, lower taxes, free trade, that strong defense, that's gone. That's no longer a consensus in the party. But do you think there's a scenario in which the party really comes apart, that is, doesn't remain one party?
It is possible, but I think unlikely. I think the forces that bind it together are stronger than those tearing apart. And this could be more of an aberration. I mean, I don't overestimate the kind of leverage involved here. In other words, Trump was, the voters find what they're looking for, and our primary voters were interested in a grievance candidate. And then Trump was what the Hollywood folks call a pre-aware title. There's a reason you're going to see Iron Man 10. Those movies market themselves. You save hundreds of millions of dollars on marketing, because it's a lot harder to sell George the Watermelon and the Terrier. You know, we don't know what that movie is. So Trump knocked everything to the floor, but the forces for free trade and rational economics, they're not going to go away. So the thing will reconstitute itself. The big question is, will we still have a grievance conservatism that has some power in the demography of our primary voters, and we will continue to lose general elections in the presidential years with big turnout? Or do we modernize conservatism as something the middle class can resonate to and the demography of modern America can resonate to, and we start winning presidential elections? That's the existential question. And I think we need another presidential cycle or two to answer.
Mike, you still consider yourself a Republican. I mean, you were really tough on Sarah Palin. You've been great on Trump since really early on. But you still think of yourself as GOP.
Yeah, I'm a cranky old man, but yeah, I still consider myself a Republican. I mean, I was disgusted enough to think about changing my registration independent, but I've served this cause for a long time, and I'd rather be in the fight to fix my party than carping from the sidelines. So, you know, I may be purged to Siberia, but I'm going to keep fighting.
Yes, well, I like your language of your language is all from Stalinism, which is, you know, a little bit what's the moment we're having here. It's the 1930s again in the GOP. But paint me a positive scenario where, you know, the forces of reason and sort of honest conservatism take back the party from this populist national movement and this monster who still remains very popular with the party's base.
I don't think Trump will recover from the disaster and his crazy behavior. So I think Trump's going to get crumpled up. He'll have the same grip on the Republican Party that Mike Dukakis had on the Democratic Party in 1989. So I don't fear the big bad wolf.
But it's not Trump. It's Trumpism. I mean, it's someone else running on his ideology, you know, without his carbuncles.
Yes, but his carbuncle's worth a lot. So I think there will still be grievance politics. That gets to the immigration issue, where we wind up on trade, some of those things. And we're going to have to litigate that, because ultimately to build a winning political party, you have to build a winning set of ideas. So we're really back in the world of fixing policy. I think we're going to win a lot in 18. We're going to get some young new faces, and I think the next generation of leaders in the party who understand the demography and are more creative about it are going to have to fight to see if they're going to have a future, and the party will. So I can't tell you it's a lock, but I think it's going to be a more vigorous fight, and the Trumpism will be totally discredited by this historic wipeout, deservedly so. And now it's going to be a fair fight, and we'll see.
I've been speaking to the Republican political consultant, commentator, and podcaster Mike Murphy. Mike, thanks for joining me on the show.
Thank you, Jacob. I enjoyed it.
TrumpCast was produced today by Jason DeLeon. Those grapes might have been sour, but he ate them anyway. Steve Lickteig is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts. He makes Jason peel the grapes for him. Andy Bowers is the chief content officer of the Panoply Network. He runs the whole vineyard. John DiDomenico does that sweet impression of Donald Trump. And hey, if you listen to TrumpCast, I know you love the Slate Political Gab Fest. They're going to have me on as a guest on Thursday, and it's not just our regular post-debate show that we've been doing. It's the whole hour talking about Trump and everything that's happening in the campaign. Please check it out. I'm Jacob Weisberg. Thanks for listening to TrumpCast.
New polls are good because the media has deceived the public by putting women front and center with made-up stories and lies and got caught.